Blog Talk Radio.
Truth to Power Show, and my name is Beverly D. And I have another exciting guest tonight. His name is Andrew Brown, and he has a book out called Overcome Adversity, Your Dreams Matter. And it is very interesting. When he comes on, he's going to give you the story behind the book, what motivated him to write this book. Now, let me give you a little info on Andrew L. Brown. He is an international speaker and author of Overcome Adversity. You can overcome anything if you believe and try. A native of Chicago, Andrew Brown earned his MBA from Benedictine University and his bachelor's degree in communication. And he is a Reserve Officer Training Corps Commission graduate from DePaul University. Mr. Brown retired after 14 and a half years of service with the United States Army, where he completed a successful decorative tour as a medical service officer. Surviving a near-fatal accident at the highlight of his military career, Brown has helped further develop the leadership skill and ability needed to overcome life's unexpected adversary. In 1998, Brown established Decisions to Destiny, an inspirational speaking and leadership development firm. And when Mr. Brown tells you his story, that is definitely a miracle, what happened. And he is really speaking from things that he experienced. And so this should be very interesting. Now, I always talk about how our young people, our students, the kind of education that they are receiving. This kind of information should be something that is part of the curriculum of the school children. This is things that is in Andrew Brown's book. It's what the young people should be learning in class at an early age. It's a lot of valuable information that Mr. Brown is giving us here. And when you hear his story, it's amazing. This lets you know how powerful your will and your want. And I mean, really, it was the grace of God that he survived what he survived. So I'm going to let him tell you about the experience and also about his book. Now, you can go to get his book at www.andrewbrownbook.com. You can go there and purchase his book. Let me see if Mr. Brown is on. Are you here, Mr. Brown?
Hi, Beverly. How are you doing today?
Fine. How are you doing? Are you ready for us?
Yeah, doing well. We're real excited here, getting situated here in the studio, here in the office. So, just a quick second.
And Mr. Brown is a native of Chicago. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. And like I say, he is an international speaker, and he's an author. And this, his book is very enlightening. Whatever that you're going through in life, and even if you're not going through anything real heavy, it's still the information that is there We all need it. And like I say, this is something that should be taught to our young people in school, and this is something that they can use. This is also very positive, and we live in a very negative world, so we need to know how to deal with all of this negativity that like we're swimming in a ocean of negativity. So we have to know how to maneuver. We have to know how to live with this negativity that is going on. I think Andrew Brown, he has an answer. You get a piece from this person, a piece from that person, and pretty soon you have the whole puzzle, the whole picture that is there. Are you ready, Mr. Brown?
I am ready. I am ready. How are you today?
Great, great. And we appreciate you here with us, giving us this valuable information. Now, tell us, first, before we get into your book, can you tell us the story behind the book? What led you to write the book? Uh-oh, did I lose him?
Let's see. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah. You're good. Okay. I want to make sure we're clear and the audience is having a good time. And I want to make sure that, if the audience wants to call in, you have a number for them to call in on, Beth?
Yes, they can call in at 347-215-8041. That's 347-215-8041. And you can push 1, and I'll know that you want to talk to Andrew Brown.
Awesome. So you were asking me earlier about the story that led up to me writing the book. You know,
yes.
Beverly, I had always aspired to write, to want to be a writer. I was interested in earning a doctorate degree, and so they said that you had to be an author in order to be, you had to write a book in order to get a doctorate. And it just so happened that I got downsized from an opportunity I had with the public school system, and it really threw me for a loop, because after my auto accident, you know, I kind of got recruited for this job of running the program for the Board of Education, and so I really put all my heart, soul, and teeth into it, and it was a very successful program. We wound up recruiting about 324 students for our following year for the program, and so we got downsized, and I was just having a moment. I was like, oh, Lord, you know, and I went to one of my places that I like to meditate on the lakefront in Chicago, and
mm-hmm.
I just kind of like asked, you know, what's going on? Can I get a, you know, can you have a brother out? I need a sign or something. And as I was, you know, sitting there pondering this moment, I had a wonderful, you know, epiphany. And then a friend of mine, who's a professor, said, come on, I'm going up to the cabin to go riding, and I'm inviting you. And so that's when it happened, that call, that pivotal call at that moment of distress for me, called and said, hey, I'm going to the cabin, let's go ride. And so that's when it took off. I had already had the outline laid out on the book, the titles and the chapters and so forth. We just hadn't really put any feet with it just yet. This was just a map of what I thought about. And so the opportunity came up, wrote it, and then I wrote the first draft. How about that? I wrote the first draft.
Okay. Now, what is the book about, and what's the general idea of the book?
The general idea of the book is you can overcome anything if you believe and try. And it's very important to know that in the midst of adversity, your dreams matter.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times adversity means a misfortune or untimely circumstance or a condition or situation. And so overcome means to go in one way and come out another. But what happens is that in the adversities of life, our misfortunes, day-to-day activities, family history, various things that kind of entrap us and entrap our potential, it holds us hostage, not for just a moment, but it holds us hostage for months and years on end. And it becomes something that we never really address and deal with. And so we kind of pass it down to our children, or kind of pass it down to someone who may consider us to be special or significant other, or we pass it down to our colleagues, or we pass it down to ourselves, and we kind of hold ourselves captive of never, ever achieving the possibility and really kind of damaging our image and our esteem. So overcome adversity, your dreams matter, is about taking the opportunity to look at your situation head on and say, I'm better than that. And so in the story, go ahead. The story is thematic of a near-fatal auto accident that I survived during my military career.
Yeah, that's what I was just getting ready to ask you about. Kind of tell us what happened there.
I was 7 hours from graduating from medical school in the United States Army. And so I enjoyed a very successful history. I'm third-generation military, and I'm the highest-ranking person who have ever been in the military in my family. And so that was a very noble accomplishment that I had achieved, because it would allow others to come behind me and do better than I would. And that's the reason we pursued that course of action. And God kind of, and God really facilitated and blessed me and opened up a lot of doors for me to be able to progress. So actually, we were out that evening, and we were on our way to breakfast, me and about five of my military friends. We were out talking, and we were going to breakfast. So we had two different cars. We got in one. I got in one car with two of my military friends. Another car had two other guys from the same unit. So the other car got held up at a stoplight. We got on the expressway. And we got on the expressway. We headed on down the expressway. Our tire blew out. And we pulled over to the side. People stopped to help us over to the side. We got outside of the car. And all we needed to do was really call roadside assistance to facilitate, a roadside recovery. But a driver was coming down the expressway unaware that we were out there on the expressway and hit the back end of our truck. And when it hit the back end of our truck, the truck took off and hit six people. And that's where the story begins. Because at that time, they called my mom and told her that I had a 10-90% chance to live and to make funeral arrangements because the condition of my body they had never seen before.
Wow. And you were in surgery for 19 hours, is that correct?
Yeah, I was in surgery a whole day.
Wow.
I was in surgery a whole day. Very, very interesting.
Well, I mean, that's amazing right there. That's a miracle right there coming out of that kind of a situation.
Yeah, they had called my mom, and when she got the report that I had been in the auto accident, they told her to make funeral arrangements for me, and they were sending her tickets to O'Hare Airport. I come from a family who was praise the Lord, sanctified, hope to feel, some prayer warriors.
Right.
And so, my mom kind of, prayed herself and mobilized her mom, and my grandmother has an whole entourage of just old school prayer, they kind of got in the face of the Lord and mobilized the church, and a lot of prayers were going up. So, for callers, the prayers of the righteous truly avail much. And the doctors that had given that prognosis, they actually, the good Lord moved at the hospital and sent a spirit of inspiration for them, and they went on in the operating room, and the best doctors were there. So,
right.
We have the best doctors in the military, and they put me in there whole day, and when I came out, by the time my mother and I made it, they said, you know, they told us that the angels was with us. That's what they told us. And he said, we still can't guarantee, you know, we're going to make it. So we give them 24 to 72 hours to live. And they made it, put a death certificate to the side there that said, you know, we got to go from there. And that's protocol. But God saw fit otherwise.
Wow. Now, when a person purchased your book, what's in it for them? What will they get out of the book?
When a person purchases Overcome Adversity, Your Dreams Matter, they're actually going to, from the moment they purchase it, they're going to be hit immediately with a spirit of inspiration. Immediately. That inspiration will drive them from the very first chapter to drive them onward. It is a conversation that me and the reader have in a very relaxed manner, like we're just sitting back having a cup of coffee, drinking some hot chocolate, or, you know, having some chicken wings and kind of cool out. And we're just talking, but I'm actually walking with them and talking with them. And we are able to enter to a dialogue of very simplistic, compassionate, intimate dialogue about life and life's realities. So when they come out of the situation, and they look at that situation, they're able to come out of there and say, hey, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. And that's given me an option now to believe that I can do something about my situation. So it's written for the reader to really take action. You know, there are strategies in there. There's a strategy in there called the TRIE attitude, educate, evaluate, elevate for personal success. It's thematic throughout the book. And it really helps to find a model and a framework to just put a circumstance, whether it be myself, for instance. I was a single-parent father. I had to take the TRIE attitude and really put myself in that situation and really find out, okay, what was my role? If that was my role, then let me come to grips about my role and let me become forgiving of self, forgiving of the other person, and then be honest about that I wasn't properly equipped to deal with that situation at that time due to my maturity level, and move onward. And then it really helped to have me to see myself in a different light and say, you know what? In spite of all of that, I was better than the situation said I was. I had options. I could do some things. I could still love. I could love myself. I could love my daughter. I could love her mom. We didn't have to be together. I could love the fact that I was a father and I was in charge, and I could love the fact of making sure I facilitated support. And then at the end of the day, I was in charge and responsible for her dream. And so today, at the time I actually, my daughter was 8, and today she's 22. She's a senior in college, and she's headed to medical school to become an optometrist.
Great. Now, there are some things that you write in your book, and you talk about fear and risk, and it seems like fear is one of the major things that people deal with to keep them from getting their goals or their dreams.
You know, that is absolutely true, Beth. When we talk about fear, it is this intangible attribute that is not rooted in a divine purpose. It has a purpose, but it is not a divine purpose. You know, the Bible says that God, I didn't give you the spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. But what happens is, you know, when a child is born, they don't really know fear. You know, you have to stop little babies. You can't allow them to walk by the stairs in them little stroll, you know, them little walkers. You know, they try to take the stairs. You know, they run into the water, through everything. You know, you have to literally stop them. They're touching stuff, touching the stove. You know, so those behaviors that children perform, they're not operating in fear. They're operating in optimism and awareness and opportunity. But what happens is, through oral communication, the words that are being said to us and the things that are being emulated to what we see and hear of others and how they justify their behaviors, that starts to plant a seed of fear in our potential. And so what happens is that when we're faced onward with circumstances and situations, instead of us responding and looking for the opportunity, we don't want the opportunity. We'd rather shrink back to the comfort zone and say, you know, nah, I can't do that. Or nobody, I don't have a frame of reference for nobody else who has done it, so therefore it's not possible for me. And throughout our culture, Beverly, you know that, you know, we've had cultural wars, we've had all kind of oppressions and segregations and discriminations and prejudices. Whether it be from a cultural context, or whether it be from a sexuality context, or whether it be from a spiritual nature in terms of dogma and related to, well, you know, Baptists and Catholicism and Protestants and so forth and so on. We have all these various barriers that we put in front. Or we work and we say, well, I can never see myself as the president of the company. I just want to work and earn my check and go home and do the same thing. You know, and so those things cause an image to be built up in our mindset. Does that make sense, Beverly?
Yes, it does. Some folks that when they deal with fear, they won't take a risk. I'm not saying not take an uncalculated, just foolish risk, but they seem to have so much fear that they will not take any risk.
And you know, you have a valid point there, Beverly. The thing that's interesting is, but they actually do take risk, and they take the same risk based upon the same image that they have. You would talk about, you know, and I guess we'll talk about it because, you know, this book has visited, this story has already been told to over 10,000 people. This is a wonderful show. I thank you so much for this show. This will be, I think, my fifth or sixth time on the radio, kind of going nationwide and international. And I could just say that, you know, I talk to people all the time. They visit me, and we talk or speak, and they read the book, or they heard my presentation somewhere, and they always say, you know, I just want to change. I just want to do something different. But the fact of the matter is that the thing that holds a person up when we're talking about this risk is exposure. You know, Beverly, it's a shame that I live in Chicago. And, mm-hmm. You know, we have one of the most beautiful skylines in the world.
Right.
Now, you know, your listeners might be listening from L.A. or Atlanta or New York, and I love all those places. But at the end of the day, when I'm thinking about a beautiful skyline, I'm actually thinking about Chicago. And Chicago has one of the most phenomenal skylines. It's culturally rich. It has a lot of things that are going on, just like every other city. And I've been all over the world, but Chicago really has the bee's knees on this, if you've ever visited or you've ever come. And the thing is that there are people that live in Chicago, Beverly,
mm-hmm.
that do not come to downtown Chicago. They have never experienced.
And that's true. I have relatives like that in Chicago.
You know what I mean? And so, you know, when I was saying to you about that ability to see, you know, that fear is something that becomes subconsciously programmed, and it puts a barrier in there. So people don't come to Chicago, downtown Chicago, because they say, well, you know, I can't afford to go in Chicago. I don't like groups, or I don't like this, or it's too fast, or, you know, it's all this. And the thing about it is that they've listened to everybody else say what they're not going to do. And what everybody else said they're not going to do has programmed their mindset to not do it. And there lies the problem.
And also, it makes a lot of sense. And also, it seems to be that people have a problem with change. I notice people get stuck. That seems to be a problem, too.
Yeah. And the truth about it, Beverly, is change is a constant. You know, we only get 12 months to enjoy an age before we continue to get young. You know, so, it's something that's it's continual. It's we only get 9 months to be in a particular grade. Then we have to change. If we go into higher education, depending on what school we go to, we're either in the semester system or we're in the quarter system. But we only get so long to be in that particular freshman, sophomore, junior, senior category. We can only be a worker, right? And for so long before we have to move into management or supervisory role or one of the directors or VP or CEO or own our own business. We can only be in those roles so long. You know, and so we can only have a pair of shoes so long. I mean, you know, you used to wear one, you know, but now, you know, you're a young woman, that one don't fit no more.
And also, that's true. I mean, and these are things that hold a lot of people back and stops them from accomplishing their dreams. And in your book, you also talk about the laziness, the procrastination. You know, these are things, too, and you kind of help people. What are some solutions that people can get over that?
Well, you know, we'll stay with the fear for a second. You know,
okay.
I use fear as an acronym.
Okay.
Because it becomes a way of seeing. I believe that you always have two options. You can look at a situation and see the bad in it, or you can turn it around, look at the situation, and see the opportunity in it. It really depends on how you see it. In my situation, I was not able to walk nor talk. So I spent 3 days in a coma and 3.5 weeks in intensive care. When I woke up out of this coma and intensive care moment, because I was doing heavy morphine and Demerol, when I actually got to the fifth week and came out of the coma and then started to kind of gradually making this progressive recovery, I actually thought it was a bad dream. And I said, eventually, you know, I'd wake up, you know. You know, and so you play it off, you know what I mean? You play it off and you know, but I know people were there that weren't supposed to be there. And then when a good friend of mine came in, and she lived in Houston, she came in and she was bawling by the time she hit the door, I knew it was a problem. I just didn't know what the problem actually was, because they had my eyes covered. And so when you can't talk, you get your eyes covered, and you can't move, you feel like you're paralyzed. But one day, the doctor came in and started touching areas that were sensitive to me. And I kind of woke up a little bit. Because I think that once you realize that sensitive areas are starting to be touched, it's your responsibility to make sure that you protect those areas so that they're not violated. And when I woke up, the doctor, I talked to him, hey, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor said, everything's cool. We had all of the residents in the room. So by the time that kind of cleared, and I kind of woke up. They kind of came in and started pulling the patches off my eyes, which allowed me to see. And I think that what happens is that sometimes we have to not allow ourselves to be blind anymore and start to see things for what it is. You know, we have to really deal with stuff and just see it for what it is. And so I said, okay, cool. This is cool. Okay, I'm in trouble, but it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because what I'm supposed to do, because you want to respond all out, but right now I'm in a situation, it's painful. I finally can see, but I can't help myself right now because I haven't done a full assessment of what's going on.
Right.
You know, because you got to really assess what's going on. And fear, I talk about fear in the book as an acronym, and it's faith, endurance, attitude, and results. And in the faith walk, you know, we walk by faith and not by sight. I had made it up in my mind, once I saw what was going on, if I ever get clarity about what's going on, I'm coming out of this mess. I just had to make that declaration to myself because I didn't really know.
Right.
But then about the afternoon, about 9 o'clock in the morning, there was a nurse friend of our family's who came down. I was not eating. They had all of the milk stacked up in front. I was not eating. And I told her, I can't eat this. We have a diet in the military of 1,200 calories, per day. I can't eat this. Too much. I didn't realize that I had lost 54 pounds, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize it. So it's amazing how you could argue a perspective with somebody and not be clear about what the conditions are.
Right.
Right. Now, this lady's a nurse. She's trying to help me, and I'm arguing with her about my dietary conditions. Like I'm an expert. I mean, I am an expert in it, but the fact is I want to argue with her about what's best for me.
At that time, you didn't really know what was really going on.
I didn't know what was really going on, go ahead, Ben.
No, I was just going to ask you, do you think that your military career influenced you and it helped you through this with the discipline part? Or
yes.
Is that something? Oh, okay.
Yes, it played a major role. Because everybody has the ability to be disciplined. If you look at your life, or the listeners look at their life, and they see what they do day to day, they can tell what they're disciplined in, right? If a person gets up every morning and focuses about getting their hair done or getting dressed in the morning, and they take an hour to do it, 2 hours to do it, whatever the case may be, they're disciplined in that area. They know exactly what's supposed to go on every single day around that time frame and how long it takes to get it done and what's supposed to be done to get the result that they need. So everybody's disciplined. But the fact of the matter is are we disciplined in the right areas? That's the pivotal question. Being disciplined in the right areas will determine how your faith is exercised. Being disciplined in the right areas will let you know how you're willing to confront situations, circumstances that always have adverse conditions and have adverse results for your individual life. How those things happen to you. Being disciplined in certain areas of your life dictate to you how you even communicate and interact with people because it's based upon things that you believe as being true.
But also, go ahead. But also with discipline, don't you need confidence?
Now, here lies, it's not a dichotomy, but it's something that people don't really realize. If you're disciplined, you do have confidence.
Okay.
Right? If you're disciplined, you do have confidence that you're going to get the results that you want. If your hair is a mess in the morning, and you wake up in the morning and say, you know, I got 30 minutes. I got to go ahead and get this done. And you get the, you know, I come from 85% family of women. And I'm married to a wonderful woman. She's a model and a spokesperson for a lot of commercial products. And I watch her get dressed in the morning. She is very disciplined in terms of my hair has to be a certain kind of way. But the moment she spends that time doing all that, her confidence just goes all out of the roof. Now, it's interesting that her confidence goes out of the roof because she's in sales. So when she leaves in the morning to go to wherever her client is, she always gets results because she's talking to them based upon the product that she's representing, which is also based upon her belief in herself for the things she took about an hour and a half to pull together to, you know, make this image that she wanted to create very real for her. So, me, myself, when I'm working, I'm very focused in reading and developing material and being insightful about what's going on with the listeners, with the marketplace, with the people in the marketplace, whether it be students or adults, doesn't matter, whether it be men or women, whether it be married or single, it doesn't even matter. I'm very focused about how I'm going to engage that audience and what we need to do and how that conversation will go. Because it's not, go ahead, Beverly.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Yeah, because it's not so much about what I'm thinking about as it is what they're actually thinking about. And the thing about the confidence, Beverly, is the confidence is the turning point to your faith. That confidence in discipline is a turning point to your faith because we walk by faith and not by sight. Everything we do, we get in our car. We get in the car under the assumption that when we put the key in ignition, first and foremost, we get in the assumption that when we wake up in the morning, we get ready to leave, the car is in the driveway or on the street where we're listening. With no Uber ticket on it. We hope it's there.
Right.
We get in the car under the assumption that the battery will work and it has not had any mechanical problems overnight from since the last time we drove it. And when we put the car in gear, we are under the clear assumption that the brakes will stop when we get ready to do whatever maneuver we're going to do as we're moving forward to go to our destination from point A to point B. So we continually operate in that kind of faith. We perform it by faith. We walk by faith and not by sight. We haven't got there yet. We don't know what the traffic is like. We don't know. We don't even entertain none of that. We take for granted that it's all there.
True. I was going to focus. That seemed to be a part of the puzzle here, too, that is, some people have a problem focusing.
Yeah. I got to agree with you, Beverly. Focusing will be something that you will develop for the duration of your life. The only problem with it is that for the first 40 years of your life, you really got to be really good at it. You got to get really good at it. And if you're not good at it, or you don't understand what it is, you have to have a mental shift so that you can shift it into the direction that you wanted to go. Because focus is a driving force behind your ability to produce faith, behind your ability to be disciplined, behind your ability to be confident. Focus is the driving force behind all those three attributes. It's really honing in on a point and really going right at that point until you get there. And it's something that we just really have to do. And it's always under attack, Beverly.
Yeah.
It is always under attack. Focus is under attack in two ways. It's either internally or externally. You can ask me to explain that, which one you want to do.
the internally. We know the externally is TV and other situations.
Yeah.
The internal
part of focus has to do with that image that I was talking about earlier.
Okay.
Right. The image. The confidence that you can do it. Because if you look at a situation, you cannot solve level one problems with level one solutions. You have to have level two solutions to solve level one problems. People are in debt. They're not in debt because they want to be in debt. They're in debt because they haven't learned how to do a budget, which gives them a forecast on how they spend their money and where they spend their money and why they spend their money. When we talk about relationships, you can't say that, I mean, you can say it, that I'm not beautiful or I'm not handsome. Or I'm this, or I'm that. And you can replay the tape in your mind about you having three sisters and they always talked about you. Or you could play in your mind that I didn't have anyone to encourage me. Or any of those scenarios. And they're all valid and they're all true because they're a part of the listener's individual experience. But the reality of it is that it's not so much as what everybody else says you are. It's who do you say you are that makes a difference. When I was in the hospital bed and I came out and you know, the doctor came in and told me I was going to have a 50-50 chance to walk, and they gave me the prognosis that they don't know if I would be able to do that, to walk or talk again. And Bev, I knew my mom was coming and putting salve all over my face and everything, and I really didn't know why. You know, I hadn't still come to this revelation just yet. It hadn't sunk in just yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to go to the restroom. So I had a catheter on, and they came in and took the catheter off. And I was like, okay, now let's go to the restroom. And so my mom and father said, listen, let's bring him a portable toilet. And, you know, the nurse, just is, the nurse is not there to be confrontational with the family.
Right.
She's there to facilitate the situation and to accommodate the patient and to help make sure the experience is healthy and meaningful so that she can expedite recovery. That's her role. So she's always smiling. No problem. But in my case, this was a pivotal moment for me, Beth. Mm-hmm. I said, now hold up a second. I was 29 at that time. I said, now, you know, if I accept this portable toilet, this won't end well. for me because I'm a grown man. I'm a father. And my parents don't need to see me naked like this. I mean, you know, I'm glad they're here. But I'm up now. I mean, I'm injured. I can't talk. I've got to write down stuff for people. I'm in a lot of pain. You know, I'm on heavy drugs. It's a lot of stuff going through my mind. But one thing I was really clear about, that I was significant. You could be significant in adverse situations. That's very important, Beth.
Okay.
I want every listener to know that. They can say right now that I am significant. You just say that with me. You just say that with me. I am significant.
I am significant.
Because that is empowering for you, self. So it bypasses everything that everybody said, and it bypasses everything that has happened to you. That declaration of me in my bed saying, I am significant. I told my parents to do my little muffled with the mouth wide shut and everything. I said, we ain't doing that. I told the nurse, help me up.
Okay.
And because whatever I got to deal with, let me deal with it now. I'm going to run into the situation. Let me deal with it. I need to go to the restroom. And my parents was like, well, we don't, you know, they was afraid. No, you ain't got eyes. And that's a part of maturity. See, focus has to do with maturity too, Beverly.
Okay.
It has to do with maturity because at the end of the day, you can't make excuses about everybody else. It ain't everybody else. At the end of the day, when you shut your eyes, did you accomplish what you set out to do that day? If I wanted to talk to my, if I wanted to give everybody something, because everybody has some sort of interaction with the church or some sort of interaction with the Bible or some sort of interaction with somebody who loves the Lord. We could easily go to Psalms 23, and it said, give us this day our daily bread. The bread that got expedited to you that day, did you eat all of it? Did you use it properly? Did you give it away? Did you make sure that you got nourished from that bread for that particular day? If I have to go to bed at night and say no, then I have to answer the question, why not? And whatever why not? Where,
right. You bringing up the why not, but that's another key point here too, because if you ask people why are they seeking their goals or why, some people don't even know why. So how can you go somewhere or accomplish something if you don't know why?
And there lies the reason why everybody should have overcome adversity. Your dreams matter. Because we're going to help them define the why. I'm going to help them look at their situation in the face and say, you know what? I am significant. And let me tell you the part about that, Beverly, that, oh, it was really simple for me. What I really wanted to do, Beverly, I just wanted to get up, go to the restroom, and I wanted to see what this was about because people have been crying. The doctors told me that I had lost my best friend. He died and brought to the hospital. So the worst had already happened. I had an option to quit then. I could have said, okay, I quit, and I'm going to die too. Or I could have chose to live. By me wanting to go to the bathroom, yes, Beverly, it was outside of my physical abilities because I have 60 screws in my body. There's 40 in my skull, 7 in my mouth, and 13 in my hip. I was not able to walk. I was not able to talk. I was 197 with 40 accident. I was down to 153, so I lost 47 pounds. I wasn't eating. I didn't have the wherewithal of my mental capacities. The odds were stacked against me. I just wanted to do something real simple and just say, you know what, let me just see me. I just want to see me. And I think, Beverly, if every reader, every listener, every reader would take time out to just be encouraged by the very thought of being able to see them. We don't see with our eyes. We see through our eyes. When we put on the suit and dress up real sharp, we see that beautiful person, fashionable, exquisite, smelling good, you know, facial accents, you know, arrangements in our hair. Our esteem goes through the roof. We see the possibility of who we intend to be for the evening. We wake up in the morning, we run into our day with the possibility that we're going to get hired, we're going to close a client, we're going to go in and give our, motivate our team, we're going to run our company, we're going to be better today in our company, we're going to be, we're going to do a better radio interview, or we're going to do a better television show, or we're going to go out and we're going to buy some outfits that's going to help us be the knockout for this particular event, or for the wedding, or for the birthday party, or we're going to pick the best cake for the birthday. The children are going to, for whatever reason we may justify it, but we see through our eyes that actual experience. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. It makes sense. And so when a person reads your book, Overcome Adversity, Your Dreams Matter, you are going to walk them through what we talked about, and you get into the why, so they can really know what their goals are and how to get to them.
Yes, that why is so important, Beverly. We're talking about it because the why, it really rests upon, you know, validating what's important to you. This book is written for people to help them validate what's important to them and help them filter, you know, and help them filter what is not important. You know, why has everything to do with what you are really trying to accomplish. That's why we have the why. We don't have a why for any other reason than to validate what we are trying to accomplish. Matter of fact, Beverly, when it says in the book, as we've been talking tonight, we've been talking about, you know, fear, faith. We've been talking about discipline. We've been discussing confidence. We talked about the ability to focus, right? And then now we've been talking about why. In the book, this is just a quick little excerpt. It says, you need to visualize your goals and dreams, and focus allows you to concentrate and bring your vision into a clear image. Why is related to your purpose, your reason for doing this. It is your justification in striving after your dream, right? It is different for each person, but you must define why for yourself. Why will you have what you need to move forward? Why says, why are you seeking this goal? You must also use your why to question your present circumstances and the world around you. When you answer the why, you will have what you need to move forward. It also says, as it is said, Some people do not have any friends for one reason or another, in this really simple manner. But you have to ask yourself why. You know, why don't you have friends? And people give you a thousand and one reasons about why they don't have friends. It's always some unique situation or circumstance. But as I encourage them, one of the things that is a spiritual law, it says a man that finds friends must show himself to be friendly. And if you show yourself to be friendly, you'll find a friend and stick it closer than a brother. And early on, you asked me, Andrew, why did you write the book? What occurred that led you to write the book? Well, what occurred that led me to write the book was I was going to DePaul University, and I was on a research team, and my professor, who's the chair of the department, we became really good friends. When I asked him about the research trip, he said, would you like to go? I said, yes. He said, go down the hall and fill out the papers. I went down the hall, filled out the papers. I was a part of the research team. I was the only African-American on the research team. We were going to Europe for 6 months. I had never been to Europe. I just wanted to go. But that reason, me moving out of my comfort zone, that whole interaction with him, of asking him, having enough confidence to ask him about the situation of going out of town, of going to do study abroad, the confidence of me asking him and crossing that cultural barrier, that confidence of me asking him as a student, he being an official of the department, and going to him and saying, hey, you know, is this something you're in charge of? And I'm Andrew Brown. Welcome. And now I want to get a chance to meet you, tell you a little bit about me. I'm in your program. And it turned out that the very person I introduced myself to became my advisor for my book project.
Okay. Now, talking about your book, we're down to our last 3 minutes. Tell the people where they can get it from, how they can get in touch with you.
For tonight, you can get the book on Facebook at Veterans Overcome Adversity. I say again, you can go to Veterans Overcome Adversity. You will see me there standing right next to the book. I'll be excited to meet you and greet you. Once you click on the link there and purchase the book, I believe there's some gifts there as well as something that you, when you purchase it. So there is a bundle there. So when you purchase the book, you'll receive the book in a digital format. You'll be able to download it. You'll receive an audio recording of my best-selling audio that my customers love. They always want to order one and get one for their friends. It's called Chosen to Win. And then there's another worksheet guide that I put together called a Breakthrough Worksheet Guide, a Goal Worksheet Guide. And that worksheet guide will help you to work on establishing your goals. It is complementary of Chapter 4, in which I talk about goals. So it's a wonderful bundle that you'll be getting there. The value of that bundle is a $65 bundle. And I believe you can purchase the book for $21.95.
Okay. Well, we're down to our last minute, Andrew Brown, and I thank you for coming on tonight with us, and we really appreciate you. And you keep up the good work.
Thank you. Did you have some fun, Beverly?
Yes. And a lot of good information, and this knowledge and information you've given to people, they really need it, especially in the times that we're in now.
Yes. So it's good. And I'm at, they can also reach me if they have a situation that they want to discuss. My office number is 773-249-4718. 773-249-4718. and they can reach me there. They can also visit my Hub page. You can go by www.hubpages.com. That's www.hubpages, HUBPAGES.com. In the search bar, you can put in Andrew Brown, or you can put in the book Overcome Adversity, and I will come up there. And you'll get a chance to see, you know, the videos there, read a little bit more about the storyline, get the visual, and then also, you know, leave a comment about what you're thinking. I'm asking a couple questions there, so you can answer some questions. When you go by my Facebook page, you can like my Facebook page and link me on as a friend. I would really appreciate it if you would share with other people about how you had fun tonight.
Okay.
Beverly, before we go, there's some callers or somebody who wants to call in and ask a question, they're able to do that. You can give them the number again.
Well, we're off the – well, the ones can hear us are still on the phone. But as far as the computer is concerned, we're off. Still some people on the phone. If you have any questions that you would like to ask Andrew Brown, you can call 347-215-8041. There are still some people on the phone, but I don't see any hands raised.
Okay. So, but ultimately, you know, they go there and go to the Facebook page, like I said, and like the page, like me as a friend, and let everybody know we're en route for a mega bestseller book run, and we want to get everybody involved. And I'm just super excited about it. For those of you who live in the Chicagoland area, and if you want to come out from Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio, you know, that'd be great. I'd be glad to see you tomorrow. But on Tuesday, I'll be at Bellwood Public Library for a book signing. That book signing will take place at 7 p.m. And that's in Bellwood, Illinois, on Washington Boulevard. And I will also be there on Saturday at 2 p.m. hosting another book signing in Bellwood. So that's Bellwood, Illinois. So feel free to come out. And like I say, you can leave a message for me here at the Facebook page. And I'll get a chance to follow up with you. But I just want to say thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I really believe in your possibilities to be extremely successful and be extremely dynamic and be extremely loving and also be extremely positive and be extremely responsible for your dream. I really believe in you. I'm looking forward to you having a fantastic 2012 and beyond. And I just want you to know that I'm proud of you, and you can really overcome anything if you believe and try. But most importantly, Andrew Brown want to tell you tonight, God bless you, and always remember, your dreams matter. Thank you.
And thank you. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you too, Beverly. Look forward to talking to you again, Beverly.
Okay, bye-bye.